Hey, y'all, this is just Stinky Pete. I've been listening to your toilet show for a while, and I'm a big fan. I was just wondering where you guys get your beans from, because I heard that little puppy dog guy from Bush's Baked Beans, he died, so I don't know where to get no beans anymore. I don't care if they're baked beans, refried beans, Kentucky fried beans. I don't care. I just want to know what you like. And if I could just give my little rock and roll band a shout out from Tulsa, Oklahoma, called Iron Cathedral. We just like beans, and we play some rock and roll, and I just want to listen to your toilets all day and eat a big old can of beans while I sit on the toilet, man. All right, y'all, take care now.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Well, hi, everybody. It's me, your friend, confidant, lover, Joe Thrashenkill. You're listening to another thrilling episode of the Toilet of Hell radio show. With me, I am joined by 365 Days of Horror. Say hi, 365.
Hey, hey, hey.
And our good pal, Brennicide. That was pretty bad. Let's try that again. Brennicide, how are you?
I'm good. Everybody, glad to be here again with all my good friends. And that doesn't mean you two. It means everybody listening in today. Thank you for tuning in.
So we've got a pretty cool episode today, and I would bet that no other metal podcast is doing this, but we're talking with our good friend Link, who is telling us about his experiences with hardship living in Venezuela, and then his experiences as an immigrant moving to Peru, and then and soon to be in Chile. And it is a very, very cool interview. And I love Link. He's such a positive, good dude. And I think people are going to love this episode. But first, before we do that, I figured that us chuckleheads would get in a few yucks, some zany stories and laughs and such before we get into the interview. What do you think about that?
Let's do it. Let's bring the yucks, or try to anyway.
So, I looked at Twitter the other day and I saw that you were on a multi-tweet rampage, and I did not know what was going on. It seemed like it was related to our last episode and that we were talking about the economics of being in a big band and how they don't make any sense.
So one of my local promotions, it's a Facebook page I follow. They just posted the link, and everybody was kind of going off in their usual way, you know, a lot of knee-jerk reaction. And the link was about, you know, Mastodon not making a lot of money. And a lot of what Bill Kelleher was talking about in that link, I have to admit, is that he was saying, you know, it's so hard for us. Obviously, it's going to be impossible for a smaller band. And my issue with that, and the issue that we brought up last week, is that it shouldn't be so hard for you guys. You guys make fucking bank and you're just hemorrhaging money playing Rockstar. It's like we said last time, they got $60,000 tour buses they're paying to rent every month. They got more than $500,000 to record a fucking rock album. I mean, they're getting way more in than they should be. And they're just putting too much out. You know, it's just bad news. So I just pretty much shared that sentiment. I said that what we were saying, if they just did kind of like a scaled down tour, they'd probably make a lot more money and not have to sell T-shirts for $50. And of course, because I was saying this on a local promotion Facebook page, I got piled on by local bands and artists who told me I was full of shit, didn't know what I was talking about, didn't make any fucking sense. You know, they're like, how could you possibly make more money playing smaller venues? How, you know, one idiot was like, how the fuck are you going to put 20 plus people in a van? And if you're going to have to get 7 vans and you're going to have to pay for a hotel for 20 plus people. And it's like the whole point of my fucking comment is that they don't need to take 20 plus people on tour. They don't. Their band is not that complex. You can get fucking 3 half stacks in a drum set and play Mastodon. It's just how it is.
So I they don't have like a big stage production in the vein of like, I don't know, Gore or Iron Maiden or something like that. That, you know, it's a big fucking deal. So I still don't get why, other than like you're so prickly about this thing that you've been doing forever that you need to have a guitar tech for your guitar tech.
Right.
And it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that they're bringing a dozen techs with them. They're bringing an entire stage crew, because they kind of do have a stage show. Essentially, what it is like a big jumbotron that just plays psychedelic, you know, dumb shit in the background.
That's incredible. I've never heard of a band doing that in my life.
Yeah, right.
I've never heard of anyone talk about Mastodon stage show. This is the first time I've heard of them doing anything.
Also, do you know how many bands that I've seen, like bands that like are local that have like a projector and a setup to show psychedelic bullshit? Like, this is a very cheap piece of technology.
Get a bed sheet.
Yeah, man. I've done that before. It was actually pretty cool.
a big lime green sheet, and just edit in there. But I just fucking get rid of the jumbotron. Get rid of the 30 guitar techs. You know, get one guy, get a merch guy and a tech, and just go have a quick, fun ass tour where you guys play, you know, a medium sized hall, and people can actually stand and watch you as opposed to sit in a fucking stadium seat 20 yards away.
I mean, I was kind of joking about it when talking about it on the last episode, but I think it would be legit awesome if they did a tour of VFW halls across the country.
Yeah. You just, people would fucking love it. Imagine if Mastodon, and this is what I said, I meant to these guys, imagine if Mastodon just spent a couple thousand dollars doing like a quick grimy sludge album like they used to do back in the day. They did it all in their own money. People would buy that like crazy. And they would, every single venue they'd go to would sell out. Everyone. And they'd be able to sell t-shirts there for not $50 and keep most of the money. And they would make more money than they would on their big tours.
I would see it being justified to charge a little bit more for a ticket if it's for a more intimate venue. You know, people are more like, so you can make money hand over fist, dude. You've got a huge fan base. Just don't fucking waste all your money.
Right. And I didn't even say the word van in this. I just made a mention of the $60,000 tour bus. I'm sure there's a cheaper bus. I'm fucking sure of it. I'm sure they have the ritziest ass bus. I'm sure they do.
You came to a conclusion in all of this that I thought was really fucking poignant, that there's kind of a class divide when we talk about metal versus punk, because in punk, it's DIY is built into the genome of it. Like, you're trying to do as much as you can for as cheap as you can. But with metal, it's that you're constantly going for something more. Now, what was it you said about the bus versus the van and that idea?
I made a pun from the John Steinbeck quote, where, and I didn't say it to these guys because I just wanted them to fuck off and leave me alone. But it's what I said was, DIY never took root in the scene because the van bands see themselves not as exploited proletariat, but as temporarily embarrassed bus bands, which is true. I think these guys, and this has happened to me before. I've gone off about like Fake Cabinets, for instance, because I think Fake Cabinets, and when I say that, I'm talking about like the wall of speakers you see at a rock show and
that
how they
have
don't
no
have
guts inside.
Yeah,
right.
They're cardboard.
Essentially. And most of the time, they're not just cardboard. They're like full plywood cabinets that are heavy. They just have no speakers. I say that that's just like a point of privilege. It just shows off that, hey, I can fill a bus with this useless shit that nobody cares about because I'm big enough and I make millions of dollars as a metal band and you don't. And I always go off about that shit because it's insincere and it's stupid and people don't like it. And then you'll always get the guys who are in the scene or in the biz who know better than you, who go off and say, well, you know, bands have always been doing this. It's just part of a stage show. It's the same thing as a Monomarth having a boat on their stage. It's the same fucking thing. And it's like, man, really, at the end of the day, you guys want this stuff. That's why you defend it so hard, is because you're the next rock star, right? You're the guy who's going to have the big $60,000 a month tour bus, and you're going to get the fucking record deal with a $600,000 advance. That's going to be you, fucking Van Halen over here telling me, you know.
That's why they have to sell 50 tickets to get on the local festival.
To fucking play for the other dumb bands that come see each other.
Yeah, no, really, everything, like, this is the key to everything that we've been discussing for like years now. It's just you want to be a big fuck all rock star, and it's never going to happen for you. And even for the people that are big old fuck all rock stars, they're not making any money because they're pretending that they're bigger than they are.
I don't know why we have record labels anymore. I just don't. And it's like, I know we work with a lot of really great independent record labels, and I know that those guys aren't just out grifting people. They want to use their knowledge and their wherewithal to share music in ways that artists might not have the experience to do. And that's great. But a lot of the time it's these guys who are just, you know, pocketing your fucking Bandcamp money when it could have taken you 20 minutes to upload the shit yourself.
Yep.
But how else is the how about that Catch Me Outside girl going to put out her album? She needs the big Warner Brothers well, contract.
You know what the deal with that girl is, right?
Do I want to know?
She records under the name Bad Baby, B-H-A-D-B-H-A-B-I-E, just to piss me off. So the whole deal with her, the Catch Me Outside appearance, was that this guy in L.A., basically, I can't remember if he was a label guy or an A&R guy or what the deal was, but he felt like he could make anybody famous and Great. Make them a big recording artist. So he basically orchestrated the whole Dr. Phil thing with this chick to have her say those words, and basically promoted it, made a meme out of it, got it viral, got it everywhere.
Really?
And then Great. Turned it into Bad Baby, which and now because she, that recording artist is like everywhere right now. So he was successful. He was able to manipulate all you fucking sheep to share this white trash chick all across Facebook. And look at her now. She's, I don't know, theoretically selling records. I don't know anybody that would buy
face
that
down
shit.
In a pile of cocaine.
Yeah, probably. I don't know anybody that buys that shit. But again, I'm 30 and I live in the suburbs, so what do I know?
Well, I mean, these guys they were going in on me about the fact like, oh, you want a band that's won a Grammy to be in a van? You want a band that's top Billboard charts, dude? That's what I told them. I was like, man, Grammys don't mean a fucking thing. They don't even accept them on TV if you're a metal band. Why else would Mastodon themselves show up in like balloon costumes and fucking baseball outfits? The band knows themselves it's bullshit.
Yeah.
And he's going off about the fact that they charted. And the moment I told him that, yeah, they charted because they sold 43,000 albums in a week. That's what charting is these days. It's not Appetite for Fucking Destruction, man. You know, nobody's buying albums. He's probably going off the way Mastodon would go off. It's just emotions. It's like, we're 40 years old. We've been doing this for too long. We don't want to be in a van anymore. We want to have the luxuries. And it's like, great, have your luxuries. Go off. Go play Rockstar. Go, you know, spread your message of love and music across the world. But just don't expect to have anything except $0 at the fucking end of it.
Yeah.
And don't complain.
Yeah. You want to have all this shit. Don't complain when you're broke, man. Like, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, Mastodon.
And it's not just Mastodon, you know, like we were saying, Devin Townsend, he's going broke. And I'm just saying, like, guys, check these fucking invoices, you know, look at where all your money's going and scale back. It's just business. If you got to make cuts to make money, then that's what you got to do. Sorry, Gary, the fourth guitar tech, go home. Yeah. You know,
I am so, so ready for all this rock star shit to die and for everybody to suddenly realize we're never going to be Axl Rose. We're never going to be Metallica. We just have to do what we love and do the best with what we can with it. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. And in this whole entitled rich ass rock star shit can finally be put out to pasture.
Yeah. If you're in a local band, don't go for that. Don't try to get noticed by Warner Brothers. Don't fucking go for Relapse or any of those major labels. Just like, do your thing. Do it all yourself. Wear all your own hats, you know, be your own manager, be your own merch guy, be your own fucking tech. YouTube how to change strings, for fuck's sakes. It's like, I don't think we need this. I think you can make a comfortable living, maybe not $10 million a year, but dudes, imagine if you were playing rock music and you made, I don't know, $50,000 a year.
Incredible. That would be just incredible.
Right. And you just lived your regular ass life in your regular ass house with your regular ass car, and you did it all on your music. it's possible. And I think the only way it's possible is if we cut out all this bullshit and we realize that it isn't the way to do it anymore. It's not 1972. So just fucking adjust and shut up. That's all I say.
I would like to add that I think it was, Lechuga Diablo, I think was who, the Devil's Lettuce was who commented on the last show, who had it right. And that, dudes join bands because they're looking to avoid responsibility. Like they just want to play music and don't want to do anything else. And in what we've been talking about here, like if you want to basically be your own boss and make music for a living, you got to do everything. You got to be like, I hate to use the word cause it sucks, but entrepreneur, you're basically your own little small business tyrant. So if you want to make it that way, do that. If you don't, man, like, there's any other ways that you can be a man child in your free time and you don't have to, you don't have to do this rock star shit.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's true, is that you got these guys, you musicians. And I think Bill Kelleher himself said, you know, all I know how to do is write music and play guitar. But
well, learn another skill, fuckhead.
Yeah. I think he's got the opportunity to, you know, pick up a receipt and look over this and go, you know, hey, what the fuck? It's just how it is these days. The money's still there. People are still, the money's getting spent on music, maybe in ways that it didn't get spent on music in 1986, but it's there. You can make the living. You just have to have some fucking savvy, you know?
Well, it's merch and it's tickets. Those are the ways. So, and again, like we talked about a million times on the show, like if you want to do this, you also have to like tour full time. Like that's got to be your deal. Sorry, everybody, but you won't make a dime on album sales.
Yeah. And if you tour full time and you don't do it without three tour buses worth of fucking idiots you don't need, then it's probably going to go a lot better for you at the end of the day. And as far as your profits are concerned, which is all. That's all. That's it. I know we went into it last show, but I'm just a little more fired up, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think it was important that we followed up on this. Next episode, we'll follow up on the eating habits of Brett Stevens of Death Metal Underground.
Let's not do that.
Condensed milk. Dinner?
I went to 7-Eleven last night to pick up some beer for a party. And yeah, sure enough, on the wall, there was a packs of Nat Sherman cigarettes with big signs all over, like, $4 off, special only. Motherfucker hangs out at 7-Eleven. Give us a review of the various taquitos selections at 7-Eleven, Brett.
Yeah, I can't believe for a guy that walks into so many convenience stores, he still, like, doesn't trust other races of people.
Fuck you, Brett. All right, let's flip the script a little bit. Let's get into this great interview with Mr. Link Leonhardt.
All right, sounds good. I'm going to take off and make room for Link to have a chat with you guys. Love y'all. See you next week, and keep it metal.
Bye, Breno. Hello, Link. And we have a very special guest with us today. You will know him from the years of the Toilet of Hell, from his... from his blog posts to his comments to his great personality within the Toilet of Hell social club, you will know him as the half elf Link Leonhardt. Link, how you doing?
Hey man, I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation.
I'm so glad that we could finally get you on the show. You've had quite the journey. Where are you at right now?
I'm right now in Lima, the capital of Peru. We've been here since like 5 months. 5 months ago, we came all the way on buses from Venezuela. We crossed the three countries to come here.
So you made the trip on the bus. How long did that take?
It was a very, very long. It was 6 days of trip. We didn't stop in any of the countries. We crossed Venezuela and came to Colombia, to Ecuador, and now in Peru. We crossed everything on different buses. It was a very, very long journey, and it was very tiresome, but we saw a lot of different landscapes and nature, and it was very, very, very cool.
So I remember you were mentioning a bit about the bus ride, and that there were moments where you were traveling, did you say, along the mountains?
Yes, we crossed the Andes section in Colombia. We practically, we crossed nearly the whole journey in the mountains in Colombia, and it was beautiful. I mean, Colombia is a really beautiful country. And we passed through some of the sections that Simón Bolívar crossed to make all the liberty he made for all the countries in South America. If you don't know it, if you don't know him, Simón Bolívar was a politician in the colonial era and was one of the greatest military minds in the whole subcontinent. And he did all the war against Spain to make the liberty of our people.
Yeah, so fuck Spain.
Yeah. Fuck imperialism. It was very cool that the guy, he crossed all the Andes in horse with all his men and went from Venezuela to Ecuador to Colombia to Peru and all of these countries and only crossed it in horses. It was insane. And we crossed part of the trails he made in that journey. It was very, very cool. The Andes in Colombia is not that cold, but it's still very cold. And for us, that we came from a city that is so hot, because we, as you may know, we have practically summer all day, all night, all year. So the change for us was different, was difficult.
So you came from Maracaibo. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Maracaibo.
Maracaibo, Venezuela. And I was looking at the weather this morning here, and it's like, well, for the next couple of months, it's going to be 105 degrees like every day. And I was thinking about about Maracaibo, and you know, what was the average temperature there like during your summer?
Well, it's very hot. All the time, the temperature is very hot. I don't know, because you use Fahrenheit degrees and we use Celsius. Yeah. So I don't know how to convert, because we never use Fahrenheit, so I don't know why you have all these high numbers every time. Like, yeah. 19 degrees, oh my God, they are practically roasting.
Let's see, I'm pulling it up on my phone now, because we didn't learn the idea of the metric system, but we didn't actually use it in this country. let's see. If it's... this is great radio, me trying to figure out how to use my phone.
Technical difficulties, please wait.
Okay, here we go. So according to Google... 40 degrees Celsius is equivalent to 105 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's too hot. That's the entire point.
Yeah. It's very hot. Well, I talked with my mother this weekend, and she told me that there is a lot of rain right now. The thing with Maracaibo is that Maracaibo is near a lake, the Maracaibo Lake. And the city have too much problems with environment. It doesn't have too much green areas. Mm-hmm. The contamination is very high because the oil companies throwing all the poop in the lake. And that made the city hotter than it was. And everyone there have AC, an air conditioner. Everyone, even the poor sons have AC. So I think that just make the climate worse than it was, because it shouldn't be. It's in a coast. It's near a lake, so it should be fresher. It should be crisper.
So you were born in Venezuela, correct?
Yeah. I'm born in Ciudad Ojeda, which is a small city 2 hours from Maracaibo. Ciudad Ojeda was it was a city made for the old company workers.
Okay, so it was a worker city. And when did you move to Maracaibo?
I moved into Maracaibo when I was studying my journalist career, and it was around 2012. I don't know how to say 2012. Oh my God, I'm the worst. 2012. Yes. Thank you. It was around that time. I went there because I have 2 hours from my university, and the trips were getting worse with the time, and the buses were not really working. So I had to move out there.
So you couldn't get a bus to the university from the town that you were from?
But that time, no. The public transport was starting to collapse, and things were getting difficult. My university had some buses because since Maracaibo was like a center city, they have students from all parts of the occident of the country, even from people from Los Andes, and they had a really large fleet of buses to travel, so students from other sides of the state and other sides of the occident of the country could travel. But that was the time that things started to get worse. It was around that time, 2012, that economic crisis was starting to flourish. And the buses are starting to doesn't work. And we have to take our own measures. Or the students, we use it to hire some different buses, but the prices went high, and a lot of people were struggling with that. So my father had to work a lot, and he gave me the opportunity to move there so I can be very close to the university. I was like, I don't know, 10 minutes on foot to the university. It was a nice change. But sometimes it was kind of difficult because I was far away from my family. But it was a great time. I met a lot of great people there, and that was where I met my wife, my now wife.
That's awesome. So when the economic crisis happened in around 2012, what were the conditions like before that started happening?
Well, things were practically better. Sometimes we had some struggles, but we didn't have any kind of economic hurry or something. We didn't were like, oh my God, things are cost so much, because the inflation was not that high, and people were living fine. And there were a lot of hopes to, like us, we were students, and our problems were like what this professor say. I got a bad qualification in this course or something. But I think the worst part of the economic crisis is that your life get conditioned to that problem. And now all the kids there are having that same issues. And kids there are not like, I don't know how to approve math or something. It's more like, I don't know why my parents are always so depressed because we don't have too much to eat or something. Mm-hmm. It's very hard. But by that time, things were better. We didn't have all these issues.
So you were talking about kind of the economic prospects of kids there right now. In the past, you've mentioned Malandros quite a bit. Is that kind of a thing that you're seeing more and more of? Is that young kids, like, rather than trying to, you know, go to university or something like that, they're kind of becoming gangsters?
Yeah. The issue is getting worse because the economic crisis right now and all the overall crisis, it's not right now economic only, because at least my state is having a really serious energy issue, and they are not getting energy for like 8 hours or 10 hours per day.
That's awful.
Yeah. The thing there is very critical right now. We sometimes do not talk with my mother or my father like in 5 days or something, because they don't have any kind of signal in their phones, because when the lights go down, everything go down, and the things are very critical right now. Well, and in that time, I mean, a lot of people started to not studying because things are more expensive, and a lot of dissertation from the universities and from the schools, because the schools right now, most of the teachers are emigrated from the country. And there are a lot of kids that are not getting all their classes because they don't have any professors left. So most of those kids are going out on the streets doing nothing. So they practically encounter bad people over there. So Malandros issues, Malandros, for those who don't know it, are gangsters, like you say. And things are going wild, right?
Was there a specific moment or event that happened to you or in the area that made you decide, okay, now is the time to leave?
Well, we were planning the trip since last July. It was a combination of all the factors. First of all, the economic crisis led us practically, we couldn't save any kind of money from what I was earning and what my wife was earning, because we were renting a place in Maragay when we have to buy all our food and stuff, and we couldn't save money for buying a house or something, because the inflation is basically your money gets liquid, and when you get your salary, it's practically devalued, and you cannot buy too much stuff with it. So the first part was that we didn't have any hope that things were getting better, and we couldn't have any kind of secure to advance in our jobs in our life. Getting a kid is impossible right now with that crisis. The other part was the insecurity. Sometimes I came home walking, because public transport is always so bloated and always so bad that I just decided, I will return home walking. And sometimes malandros started to chasing me and had to rob me, and it wasn't pleasant. The other part was because that we want to get kids someday, and like that we didn't want to bring a kid there, because the health system is very collapsed right now too. It will be a shame that the kid will die from some kind of bacteria in a hospital, or that my wife gets sick, because all the hospitals are practically infected or something. It's very difficult.
That's horrible. I'm glad that you were able to make a move then. Do you think there's any hope that conditions will improve in Venezuela, or do you think that they're just going to get worse?
No, from what the analysts and what the people say there, things are not getting worse right now, because Venezuela is currently trapped in the weird geopolitical game. And most of the people are just emigrating. I mean, in Colombia, people are coming from Venezuela on foot. they are not going in buses right now because people are just so desperate to get out and get a better life that they are crossing the border on foot. And they are coming to all the cities in Colombia on foot. So it's very difficult. I mean, there are a lot of people that cannot feed their kids or cannot, like having a kidney issue or some kind of sickness is practically a death sentence because there are not medicines, there are not any kind of health treatments. The inflation makes you not wanting to work because you work for nothing. I mean, you're practically paying your boss to go to work. So people are just going to other countries in mass. So I don't think that will be get better very soon because of that. There are not enough people there to fight. There are only children and old people right now. So, and besides that, the government is not having any kind of measure to try to counter that. They are just feeding the bad machine, the bad system, so they can perpetually stay in the power.
So what kind of is there any kind of group trying to counter the government to try to protest or possibly overthrow them?
Not right now, because last year the protests were so crude that a lot of people died and all these kids practically flew out of the country. And they say this is not worth the fight because people is not getting better. The government is just staying stronger because they have bought the military, and when they see some kind of protest, they just go out with the military and start to bomb everyone. So it's people were ceases the fight because of that. And opposition parties are not doing anything right now. It's just worse.
You had initially planned on, was it Ecuador that you were planning on going to?
No, Colombia. I have two sisters in Colombia. See, in Colombia. And they live in one of the cities in Los Andes, in the Los Andes region in Colombia. But we have to think on a plan B, because all the people coming to Colombia, they practically saturated everything, all the Venezuelans. And there is a lot of bad things there because of that. Because there are a lot of people from Venezuela that are practically sleeping on squares and the streets, and Colombians say that that is not good. So they had to try to stop a little bit the migration process. Because of that, there are a lot of people walking.
I think we
and sleeping on the streets and the squares in Venezuelans and all of that.
So, are the Colombians, are they also maybe showing some resentment for the Venezuelans as, in addition to the difficulties the Venezuelans are having getting there?
Kind of. I mean, I don't really blame all these countries for all the measures, because when you get these high migration rates, you are aware that maybe those people are sick. For example, like, we don't have any kind of good medicines in Venezuela, so people are getting sick of really weird diseases that supposedly to be eradicated years ago. So, I mean, those people are trying really to protect themselves because of that. I mean, Venezuelans tend to be very hard-working persons. The first people that went out from the country were really prepared persons, people with degrees, people with even with doctorates, PhD, and all the stuff, because education in Venezuela was very cheap. So we are very prepared, and we just really want to work. But there are also bad people going to other countries, robbing and doing bad stuff. So you get the good and the bad of the people. So I don't really blame all these countries doing all these measures, because they really need to protect their people too. And migration in weird and crazy numbers is very difficult to handle. But in summary, all the Latin American country overall have been very receptive of us, except some kind of xenophobic stuff happening in Panama and Ecuador. But overall, there are a lot of cases that people went to another country and people from that country received them very well and helped them a lot. So it's not like Colombia closing our doors and stuff. It's just that since they are the closest neighbor to us, they receive a lot of people, too much.
Gotcha. I just hope that maybe some of the people in the United States listening to this are thinking, hey, maybe we could be a little bit better to the people that are coming here because they need to get away from the conditions they were in or in another place.
U.S. I think U.S. could get some tips from all these countries. I mean, countries like Peru and Chile are giving us the opportunity to be legal here with all kinds of documents and visas. And they are practically encouraging us to since we are professionals, to be there because they want us to help them getting better in their countries. So it's kind of the both sides, you know? Having the opportunity to get these peoples, but get use of them, giving the chance to have better jobs and better opportunities that they are not getting in their countries, because you cannot treat the migrants like no, they are the classic, they are taking our jobs or they are coming to rape us, and no, I mean they are bad people, but the bad people you have to put them in jail or deport them, but the good people you have to get use of them.
I mean, I live next to bad people who have been here their entire lives. It's in any group of people, there are bad people. It's for the most part, I think people are good.
Yeah, and immigrants tend to be all full pedal to when they get a job. So just like my wife, she graduated from a journalist degree like me, and she is working in a restaurant. And she's doing everything, cleaning, doing, checking the payments, serving the tables, and all of that. But she's making a terrific job. Even the owner of the restaurant right now is realizing she's a very hard worker person. So immigrants tend to be like that. Like, I don't know. It must be that we try to do all the best we can because we don't want to get back.
Yeah, definitely. That definitely makes sense. And how about for you? Have you had a chance to find anything that works for you yet?
Not yet. Things for taking some jobs here for men are kind of difficult, and it's people here tend to favor more on women to get some jobs. Mm-hmm. We're still hunting, and right now we are saving some money to travel to Chile and move out there, because we have my wife's brother. He's in Santiago de Chile, in the capital, and my wife is so happy to reunite with her family. So I think we are getting moved there.
When do you think you might make the move?
The first or the second week of August.
Oh,
we're going to move. It's very near. My wife is saving the money. Yes. We are very very excited and we are very optimistic because we have spoke with some friends who are there, and they told us that works there are even, we have some other opportunities there we could take advantage. We in Lima, we are in the north part of the city, so it is all the woodworks are in the south, and the city is so big that we have to spend like 2 hours or 3 hours to go there.
Yeah, I know the climate isn't very good right now in the United States for immigrants. Would you in the future ever consider coming to the U.S.?
That will be great for me. I really want to visit you all.
I would strongly recommend waiting a few years until we can get some shit figured out, because it is conditions here are not great at the moment. But we'll get there.
Please spin kick all the racist.
Yeah, no, that's I'm working on it. Every time I see somebody with a swastika tattoo, I'm just punching them in the throat.
That's great. That's great for me. I mean, this is a very not an episode not worth for all the races. So we are spin kicking all the races with our podcast today.
Yeah, yeah. I would doubt that we have many racists that listen to us to begin with. But if you are listening to today's episode, fuck you, buddy.
If you are racist, I will come down to the U.S. and hunt your fucking butt.
There you go. I'm definitely gonna chop that up as a sample and open the show with it.
Yes.
This episode is not available for other races.
So, but I don't want to belabor talking about Venezuela too much. But it was something that you had talked about to us quite a bit. And I think it was, you know, fascinating in a way and you know, scary, but can you talk about the food shortages and trying to buy the consumer goods that you needed there over the last couple of years? What was that like?
It was very difficult. The lines on the supermarkets were always so freaking long that you could spend like 4 hours or 5 hours or even the whole day trying to buy two stuff. It was very difficult. By that time, when we were in Maracaibo, food shortage was worse because Maracaibo is a city near to Colombia. And there were these smuggling fashion, I don't know. There were a lot of people that smuggled all the food, went to the supermarkets and bought all the food they can and went to Colombia and sold there. Because the exchange for pesos to bolivares, our currency, it was very high. So people make a lot of money with that. But at the same time, they practically help all the shortage of the food there. It was very difficult because of that. You have to spend a lot of time and you couldn't buy everything you can or you could because you were restricted to one product or two products or even three products. You were always conditioned to your buying was always conditioned by all the rules that supermarkets were wanting to do because there wasn't enough food for everyone. All the shortage persist still today, but since we are near to the Colombian border, some people started to bring food from Colombia to our cities. But it is still very difficult because the prices are always changing. I mean, inflation is practically you have a price, and the next week the price is higher. So the thing is happening with the food too. You can buy something when I don't know 1 million de bolivares, and then the other week is 5 millions. I don't know. It's too much. So that really makes harder for people with families to feed their family.
What would you eat most of the time? What were those items that you could get?
Well, for example, we used to like sometimes when meat started to rise the prices, we used to exchange meat with beans, all kind of beans. Red beans, arvejas, which are like little green beans, all kind of beans, because those are proteins and those feed us with proteins just like meat do.
Yep, that's all the vegetarians out there know what you're talking about.
Shout outs for my fellow vegetarians. a ver, ¿qué más? Flour to make arepas. Mm-hmm. Started to get shortage too, so we used to exchange them for other vegetables like plantains or yuca. I don't know how to say yuca in Spanish, in English.
I think it's just yuca. Which is, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, okay. We have dumb accents and say things like yaca.
I say yaca, yeah.
No, it's yuca.
I know that arepas are your jam. What exactly is that?
How did you say?
Arepas. How do you say it?
Arepas.
Arepas. There we go.
Yeah, we used to make all this stuff. We like for the flour, when we bought the flour, my wife used to mix the flour with plantains or yuca or oat to not consume all the flour altogether. So she mixed it a little bit with all the stuff. And the arepas were getting different flavors. It was very cool. chicken, we used to stop buying chicken because chicken went so expensive that it was impossible to buy. And fish was the same thing. We didn't get any fish. So like all the things that we couldn't buy in other markets and more expensive and were higher the prices, we just we won't buy that. So we used to stick with the things we could find.
Gotcha.
I think the other thing that helped us was because my wife when she started to work in a period, she used to go to the supermarkets and like every time she could, and she amazed a whole lot of food. It was very cool because we didn't have to worry to go to the supermarket every day, and I could like go to work more relaxed about that. And last year I work in a place that sometimes we were near to the nation, and the governor in that time used to make all these big ass food bags to buy at a really affordable prices, and they used to buy everything I could. So we could amaze a lot of food, and we even could help my wife mother. We could help her win the food too. So it was very cool.
So, you're making your move to Chile soon. Do you know anything about the metal scene in Chile?
I know that Chile scene is very, very intense. We have covered a lot of bands over there in the black trash area, but they have a lot of heavy metal, like classic heavy metal. They have a very healthy scene right now. It's very cool, and they have a lot of shows. I mean, everyone that is coming to Latin America, all the big bands are coming to Chile. And I am really, really desperate to see some shows where they are getting there in November and September that I'm so, oh my God, I want to go.
who in particular are you looking forward to seeing?
Well, the first one, I know you are going to crucify me, but Helloween is going to tour there with the Pumpkin United show, which is they gather all the singers, and is Kai Hansen, is Michael Kiske, and is I don't know, Andre Deris. They are touring with Creator and Arch Enemy.
That'll be a really cool show.
And you love Arch Enemy.
Yeah, I mean, they won't play all the old stuff, but it will be a dream come true to see Michael Amott. So my little fanboy heart is beating. And At the Gates is going to make a show there too, and Paradise Lost.
Hell yeah, it sounds like you've got some really great shows coming up then. So I take it you're pretty excited about this move then.
Yeah, yeah, I'm very optimistic about this change. The thing that you're not going to tell everyone, right? This podcast is private, right? Can I talk about personal issues? Well, I have been battling with anxiety issues, and this month has been very, very difficult for me and for my wife. But I feel better now, so I can really talk about it. I have been in a very difficult position right now because since I cannot find a job, I have been with terrible panic and anxiety issues that sometimes I just couldn't get out of the bed because of that. And that really damaged my health, I think, because I'm having some migraines and headaches and stomachache. But it is like that because I was very stressed because I really wanted to help my wife. My wife is working so freaking hard. And I was like, I cannot find any kind of job. So I was nearly depressed and it was very difficult. But since we realized we could move to Chile, we are so excited to be there. So it's like we are getting a new objective to conquer. So my wife has been really, really supportive for me. And I don't know, shout out to my wife, I guess. She's very great.
Oh, yeah, so, shout out to Link's wife.
Yeah.
I think this thing that you're describing, though, I think that that's... I'm glad you're talking about it because I think that's a pretty common anxiety that people experience when there's, you know, to use a word for it, economic anxiety. Like if you don't know if you can be able to pay for the things that you need to pay for, if you don't know if you can find a job or anything like that, it takes a toll mentally, and that in turn like takes a turn physically. And I think that that's something that. I'm glad that you're feeling a little bit better about it. I'm sorry that that's been something that's weighing so heavily on you.
Yeah, I mean, I try to not talk too much about it, and that is very difficult. So for everyone that is doing all this exhausting part of being with anxiety or depression or any kind of bad mental health, so please get some help. So you're really worth it. Please stay with us and really have someone to talk about it and all the stuff, because that was happening to me. I didn't talk to basically with anyone because I was always alone over here. So I just tried to write a lot, and I was freelancing as a blogger for other sites as well. But the anxiety was so hard that sometimes I just couldn't work. I tried to open my notebook because since I don't have any computer right now, I write everything on my notebook, and then went to a internet cafe or something and transcribed everything. So sometimes when the anxiety was so hard, I couldn't even write any word because I couldn't. The headache and the stress, and I didn't have any idea to write about. So please, if you are having any kind of issue, please seek help. And if you have some near friend, real close friend, talk about it. If you don't want to talk about it, just hang out with someone, because loneliness pays its toll to you.
Yeah, I know, definitely. I hope that you know, as you're making this move and as you're settling into a new place, that you will definitely stay vocal and reach out if these things are still an issue for you. And if folks perhaps wanted to help you with this journey, could they maybe hit you up on Facebook?
Yeah, sure, that's okay. I mean, all the support I have been with all of you has been really, really positive. One of the things that made me feel better besides the moving to Chile, was all the support I get from all of you, and it was very cool. My close family, my wife, my best friends from Venezuela. I mean, all the Venezuelans tend to send shout outs to everyone in every time they get on camera or microphone. So shout outs to my friends. yeah, this will be an episode full of shout outs.
Do you want
they helped me a lot.
Do you want us to play some reggaeton while you're doing the shout outs?
No, please don't. Please don't do it. no, really. All my friends were really, really supportive. And my wife and my family and all my super friends in the toilet. I have met incredible people, all of you. You have been incredible.
Well, Link, do you want to make a music selection for this episode?
Well, the song that I want to play today is called What Doesn't Kill You. It's from the Sunrise to Sundown album made by Spiritual Beggars, the old band from Michael Amott, my favorite musician right now. So play that one, please.
Hell yeah, you got it, man. I think that's gonna do it for us on this episode, but thank you so much for talking with us today, Link. Folks, we mention on the show all the time, join the Toilet of Health Social Club on Facebook. I realized this week, because I had a couple people message me about it, that they could not gain access because I don't have a way to access it anywhere. So what I want you to do is send me a message if you want to join, and I will personally include you so you can hang out with Link and all the other cool bros.
Yeah, thank you very much for the invitation. I really, it was a very fun morning for me. thank you very much for everything you have done for us. And I don't know, remember to follow me on social media. I'm always sharing everything I can and all the stuff we are getting through. And really, really, I really thank you everyone for everything you have done for us. We are very appreciated. From my wife and I, we are really happy to meet all these friends we have over here.
Hell yeah. Alright everybody, thanks for talking with us, Link, and thanks for listening to us.
Ciao.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.